Come on, let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Graybar Sports Open Live. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
All right, here we go. Welcome in. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Welcome in. If you want to join us, you can do so by calling, texting, tweeting, leaving a message on the video chat. Lots of ways to get connected with the program. We have a full two-hour show today, and that will lead right into Cardinals baseball. The Cardinals have a late night tonight as they are going to play a 9-10 game. That means 8:15 for our pregame show. So we've got our full 6-8 Sports Open Line tonight. What a good night for Cardinals fans to be able to be tuned in here as we've got we roll from our Redbird Rush Hour into Sports Open Line right in to Cardinals baseball. Here's what we've got coming up on the show today. In about 25 minutes, we are going to have Rob Cerfolio on the show. And for those of you who are not familiar with Rob, he is the Cardinals' assistant general manager for player development and performance. We got the chance to talk with him on the Countdown to Opening Day show during the offseason after he was hired. Super impressive dude. I mean, this guy is the kind of guy you want in the organization. And until Chaim Bloom really starts doing more media and starts talking, and I would guess that's really not going to happen until John Mozeliak exits his role as president of baseball operations and Chaim takes over. Cerf is kind of the guy who is the highest ranking individual of the next regime of Cardinals baseball who is speaking. So I wanted to talk to him about these moves that were made at the trade deadline, some of the players that are coming in, and also get a bit of a status update from him on how his first year went with the organization. They have implemented a lot of changes. They are continuing to implement changes. There's a lot going on at the spring training facility. Obviously, they've added a lot of staff. His fingers have been all over everything. He's had a lot of people that he has hired. Also want to talk to him about the dynamic of coming in knowing that Chaim Bloom is eventually going to be your boss, but also working a year where John Mozeliak is your boss, and just that dynamic and what it was like maybe in the room when the trade deadline was coming up. So we got a lot to talk about with Rob Cerfolio. He's going to join us at 6:35, and we'll be with him probably for about 15 minutes or so. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that conversation for sure. Also, our friend Joe Pott, who you hear doing Cardinals pre-post and morning sportscast and doing all kinds of things. We'll talk Cardinals baseball. I need to get Joe on the show more often. I love talking with Joe. And he texted me earlier today, and I'd already kind of thought to myself, you know what, I'm going to try to get Joe on tonight. And then he texted me about something else, and I was like, okay, perfect opening. I'm able to talk to him. And then towards the end of the program, I'm going to replay the conversation that Tom Ackerman had yesterday on Sports on a Sunday Morning with John Mozeliak. Thought it was interesting because there was more of a precise plan sort of written down on what it's going to be like moving forward for this organization in the near term. We know that Chaim Bloom takes over as president of baseball operations for next year, but what does it look like in the final 2 months of this season? And for that, the decisions that are being made are already somewhat connected to 2026. Speaking of that, we did get the Cardinals making a couple moves today. Lucan Baker is no longer in the organization. Baker was designated, and he has been claimed off of waivers by the Los Angeles Dodgers, and the Dodgers have assigned him to their AAA team. So Baker is gone. That kind of makes me sad. I got to know Lucan a little bit. There's a bit of a personal relationship in there, just in the sense that I went out on a Cardinal Caravan with him, so spent a couple days with him where we were able to talk about things other than baseball. So I feel like I know him just a little bit. Anytime people that you know exit the organization, that makes you a little bit sad. So I am a little bit sad that Lucan Baker moved on. I would have also liked to have seen a scenario where he would have gotten more of the opportunity to impact the major league team. You know, he rightfully made the opening day roster this year. And then coming out of the year, he was hitting the ball hard, but he was not hitting the ball in the air. He was not hitting home runs, and a lot of times he was hitting it right at guys. And I know he had a lot more in him than what he showed to start the season. That I don't criticize the Cardinals at all for sending him back down to Memphis, and I don't criticize him at all for not bringing him back. It didn't fit this roster. But if he could have gone off to more of a hot start, if he could have been a guy who was showing legitimate power off the bench and could be that dangerous pinch hitter, man, that I would have been so happy for Lucan. So I'm a little bit sad by that. But at the same time, they didn't need him anymore because they acquired a non-40-man version of him when at the trade deadline, right? They make all their moves. And they make the trade with Steven Matz as he ends up going to the Boston Red Sox, and the return for that was a power hitting AAA first baseman. And I know there's also he can play a little bit of third base as well, but essentially what they got in Blaze Jordan was a guy who had the same skill set as Lucan Baker without being on the 40-man roster, being a little bit younger, maybe even having a higher ceiling. So Jordan sort of replaces Baker, and now we'll see what happens with Jordan if he maybe gets an opportunity at some point before this year ends or what it looks like in spring training next year. Cardinals, that's one of two moves that the Cardinals made. The other move that they made, they acquire left-hand pitcher Anthony Veneziano from the Miami Marlins. He goes to AAA Memphis. He had recently been designated by the Marlins. He's a lefty. Right now, the Cardinals have almost nothing in terms of left-handers in the bullpen because they've got JoJo Romero, and that is it. So Veneziano comes in this year at the major league level. He has pitched in 24 games with a 4.71 ERA, 291 average against, 20 strikeouts in 21 innings. So probably the strikeout numbers are the numbers that jump off the most in terms of what he has done this year at AAA. 5.84 ERA, 12 games, one start, a 267 average against. So a guy who's got some big league time, a guy who's got some big league track record, and you would think at some point there's going to be an opportunity for him to impact the major league roster, if nothing else, because he's a lefty option. And right now, the Cardinals don't really have the lefty option. And the reason I keep saying that is because Romero's not your classic lefty, because he's also somebody that's being given probably the first opportunity to be the team's closer. And when you're the closer, obviously you're not in a righty or a lefty lane. So if Romero's going to be in there in that high leverage closer spot, at least for the time being, or get a lot of those type of opportunities, you really don't have a lefty in the bullpen. We'll see what Veneziano does down at AAA Memphis, but that's going to be interesting to watch to see if he gets a major league opportunity. Maybe it's just something where he shuttles up. They've got one area that I'm sure for at least they reduced a lot of their major league depth when they traded away Helsley, Matz, and Maton. I've been on record as saying I think they've got some guys. Not that the bullpen's not going to take a step back, because those three guys are all really good and are a big part of the bullpen, but I've been on record saying I think the pieces that they have right now are going to be pretty good in terms of just being able to handle a lot of what those guys handled. What worried me was those depth pieces, the guys all season long, when you've seen the Granillos and the Swansons and the O'Briens and that group get shuttled between the big leagues and AAA, you were bringing guys up from AAA who are contributing. And I was worried about, okay, the next time you have a relief pitcher, go cover three innings and you need a fresh arm. That fresh arm that comes up, are you going to be able to rely on them? Well, I would think that they've got those same sort of worries and that they're going to do some things to try to shore up that depth before the season comes to an end. We're going to continue this conversation. Again, if you want to chime in, you can do so by calling or texting 314-436-7900. For those of you watching on the video stream, you can leave a comment in the chat. You can also tweet at me if you'd like, at Matt Pauly on air. Again, we're about 15 minutes away from being joined by Rob Serfolio. We got a lot of things to talk about with him. That's all coming up in just a few moments. Don't go anywhere. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Great to have you with us. We're we're a little bit more than 10 minutes away from Rob Serfolio joining the program. Really looking forward to talking with the Cardinals Assistant General Manager for Player Development and Performance. Do want to talk to him about the individuals that have come into the organization here recently, but also want to spend probably more time with him, talk about what he has seen in the organization over the last year or so, because he's been here, he's started to put in the infrastructure, and it's going to be, I just think that part of the story of the Cardinals, and look, I understand not everything is, you know, lemonade and roses right now, or whatever the term is, but there are some really good things happening. And for me, those good things happening are connected to the people that came into the organization last year, led by Rob Serfolio and the Larry Days and the Matt Pierponts and guys like that who have done a really nice job. And they've hired a lot of instructors and things like that. In fact, we got a message that came in earlier and about Lucan Baker, and said Lucan Baker is now with some better coaches. I think the coaching throughout the Cardinals minor league system is fine. I have more confidence in the coaching in the Cardinals minor league system now than I probably ever have. And when this group put together the player development staff for this year, they got some legit people in there. So I would respectfully look, I'm not super connected with what the Dodgers have in terms of coaching in their minor league organization. And Dodgers are a super smart organization led by a great, you know, baseball operations lead, Andrew Friedman, and they make a lot of really good decisions. They also have a whole lot of money where they can go make as many bad decisions as they want to make, and it's not going to matter because they're able to pay for something to make up for that. That's not something the Cardinals are – that's not a position the Cardinals are ever going to be in, and that's okay. People get way too caught up in the money side of this, the payroll side. And whenever people accuse the DeWitts of being cheap, and I don't think they're cheap. Can they spend more money than they've spent? Sure. I think every Major League Baseball owner can do that. I think from a big picture standpoint, Major League Baseball owners kind of operate in fear of what is to come. And you know, I guarantee you, they've been thinking about a potential lockout since the moment the last collective bargaining agreement was signed. The uncertainty around regional sports networks, and even though that has settled a little bit, it is not completely settled. The uncertainty around national TV money, ESPN walking away. Like, there's so many things that are up in the air when it comes to revenue streams in Major League Baseball that I think almost across the board, Major League owners sometimes are not more concerned, but definitely very cognizant of those things, more cognizant than they need to be. At the same time, they're business people, right? That's who generally owns baseball teams, business people. And I'm not creating an excuse for them. I just know they live their whole entire professional life in a more corporate structure when it comes to business. And a lot of them end up running their baseball teams kind of like they would run a business, and that doesn't always result in the baseball side of things being the best. But I push back on the idea that the DeWitt family is cheap. I don't agree with that. I want the DeWitts to continue to be the owner of the Cardinals. I think their long-term track record shows that they have a commitment to doing things the right way. It's taken some time here, and there's no way to prove this. Like, I don't like going down this path too much because I've said this a million times, and there's nothing new to add to the argument, and there's also no way you can believe one thing, I can believe another thing, and there's no convincing either side. All there is waiting, and then a couple, 2, 3, 4 years down the line, I'll be able to sit here and say, hey, I was right. Or a couple, 2 to 3 years down the line, you're going to be able to look at me and say, no, Matt, you were wrong and I was right. And that comes to bringing the payroll back up and spending money and things like that, right? So we just have to wait. They're obviously not going to spend a lot of money when the team is not in a competitive window. And when I say competitive window, I mean competing at the highest level. If the ceiling for a team is kind of sneaking into the postseason or being in wildcard contention, that's not a competitive window. A competitive window is one where you look at the team and you say, this team could win a World Series. And I don't know how long that's going to happen. Our friend Aaron, who sends in messages all the time, says he thinks the Cardinals are 5 to 10 years away from the playoffs and 10 to 15 years from World Series contenders. Aaron, I appreciate your opinion. I think you're crazy. I think that is very... 10 to 15 years? Like, what? What? 10 to 15 years? That would be cycling through basically the entire organization twice. That's crazy talk. 10 to 15 years is crazy talk. Any team that can't go through an entire like rebuild within a 3 to 4 year window, they just don't know what they're doing. Right? They just don't know what they're doing. If you are given the resources as an organization but it's going to require some tough decisions and it's going to require that reset, the longest it should take is 4 years. That's why you laugh, and not in a mean way, but sort of. That's why you laugh at the Pittsburgh Pirates of the world, because they said they'll go into they're going to rebuild. What? No, they're not rebuilding. They're just staying horrible, right? That's what they're doing, because they're not actually investing in the product. There's no pathway. That's the difference. And I know I'm sitting here and I sound like a honk for the team. I'm listening to myself. And so I know the naysayers are thinking about that about me, but I believe what I'm saying. I truly believe what I'm saying. There is a path. There is a path, and it is a good path. A couple years ago, John Mozeliak, sitting in a suite at the winter meetings, made the comment, well, our model's going to be tested. And guess what? The model was tested, and the model did not pass. They needed a new model. Baseball has changed. And the model that the Cardinals were using for years and years and years and years and years wasn't going to work anymore. They got passed by so many other organizations. And you bring in new people, and you get on a path. And there's a lot of people who feel burned by this organization, and they don't want to hear about hope, and they don't want to hear about a pathway, and they think what's coming up is just going to be more of the same. And I'll sit here and tell you, I don't agree with that. I think there is a pathway. I think there are really smart people that are getting this organization back on track. I don't know how long it's going to take, but Aaron, it's not going to take 10 to 15 years. That, to me, is absolute crazy talk. We'll take a break. When we come back, Rob Serfolio is going to join us as we continue on with the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Got a late one tonight with the Cardinals. They match up against the Dodgers in Los Angeles. 9:10 first pitch. I've got you for a pregame beginning at 8:15. So we've got a full two-hour edition of this program, Sports Open Line. I'll tell you what, we are really happy to be able joined right now. He is the assistant general manager for the Cardinals for player development and performance. He is Rob Serfolio in his first year. And I'll tell you what, everything I've seen and heard about some of the things that he has implemented with his team has been incredible. Just coming off a trade deadline where even more talent got put into the player development system. Happy to welcome Rob onto the program. Rob, thanks for taking the time. How are you?
I'm doing well, Matt. How are you? I appreciate you lying and talking about all those good things you referenced right there. That's a good start.
Yeah, absolutely. So what was John Mozeliak spoke to the media just after the trade deadline, and he went through a list of a lot of people who are in that room putting together decisions, and obviously your name was in there. Take me through what mm-hmm. it was like on trade deadline day and the days leading up to it as the team tried to get the best possible return for some players going away.
Yeah, it's hectic, right? I mean, it's you're trying to consider every possible decision on the board, and when you're looking across 29 other teams, what each one of them needs, what you need, what's best for the short term, the long term balance, and all those things, and you kind of mix that in with each organization kind of looking at their own players and external players a little bit differently. It obviously makes it tough to line up sometimes, but I think it was really fun for me just to be in there for the first time as a Cardinal, and obviously learn from Mo how he has his experience obviously speaks for itself, and see how he navigates all the various conversations and dialogue with the different teams, and then be able to do that with some of my own new teammates in the organization was really fun. And it was a lot of work. It was some late nights. It was a lot of extra hours spent at the ballpark. It was pretty fun to be in that room, and what a collaborative process it was.
Is it stressful? Because we all knew the guys who were likely to be moved in the three relief pitchers with expiring contracts. The first two, Helsley and Matz, go off the board the night before. And then the final deal for Maton, I think Mo said it was like a minute and 15 seconds or something before the deadline that it got submitted. Is it stressful going through that entire day where there is still one? There might be other things that get done, but there's one thing that really needs to get done?
Yeah, for sure. It's you're kind of playing against the clock, and it's almost like I joked with my wife when I came home from work on the last day. I was like, it's like going in, like being the husband on the labor side of things. You go in, you're all excited, and then you're there for 8 hours and nothing happens, right? So it's really peaks and valleys in that way, which makes it fun. And I think our group deserves a lot of credit for just being really organized and seeing every opportunity all the way out. And that's just a really important strategic way to try and approach it. And that's what the group did. And it was really fun to be a part of it.
The biggest piece from a prospect ranking standpoint, and I know you guys evaluate players not on what MLB Pipeline or Baseball America thinks, but people like me look at those prospect rankings. Jesus Baez walks in as the number six prospect in the organization, according to MLB Pipeline. What's the excitement level of this guy coming to the Cardinals?
Anytime you get an opportunity to work with a young, highly talented player, that's a really good start. And I think that's what JB brings to the table for us, and actually going to get an opportunity to meet him next week, which I'm really looking forward to. But, he's an up-the-middle defender that has good bat-to-ball skills and the opportunity to impact the baseball. So he does a lot of things really well on both sides of the ball. And we want guys that can come in and impact us, not just offensively or defensively, but ideally both those things. And we're just continuing to develop complete players. So I'm really excited to work with him. I've heard really good things about the group over in New York that's been cultivating his development the last couple of years, and hopefully we can continue that.
One of your things is you try to create an individual plan for every single player, which to me seems like an incredibly daunting task. And it's not just about, reading a stat page or reading a StatCast report and saying you need to do this. There's truly a focus from you and your team on like getting to know players and then putting together that. So what is the challenge when six new guys walk into the organization and now part of your job is trying to get to know them as quickly as possible?
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up. I mean, every great player plan starts with trust and relationship with the player. And the thoughts and ideas of, well, how do we help this player get better is only as good as the player's interest in wanting to leverage those thoughts and ideas. So, I think just globally, that's going all the way back to the fall when, I first showed up here. It was just trying to learn who our players are, what makes them tick, and try and make sure that from a philosophy standpoint, that our tact always starts with relationships, trust, and explain the why. Like, this is a partnership with all of our players, and their voice is the most important part. So it's really trying to figure out who they are, where they come from, what makes them tick, and then putting experts around them that hopefully create curiosity. And we're super clear with what we want to solve for organizationally at both the player and culture level. But you're right. It takes a whole village to write an individualized player plan for 200 plus players. When you're thinking about major league players all the way down to guys in the DSL. And that's, kind of the fun art and science that is what our business is. And hopefully we continue to make some strides forward, but it's really helpful when you have players that are hungry and eager to get better. Those conversations obviously become a lot more fun.
Cardinals Assistant General Manager for Player Development and Performance, Rob Serfolio, continuing to join us here on a Graybar Sports Open Line. The guy that you guys acquire that seemingly is closest to the big leagues is Blaze Jordan, power-hitting corner infielder. He's assigned to Memphis. A guy who, from the time he was 13 years old, he's hitting 500-foot home runs. He's a fun guy to bring into the organization. I know the org's been interested in him before. What can be done with him, maybe? Because it feels like, he's close, but he's not close in some ways. When you look at him, what's the next step for him to be ready for the big leagues?
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things that you touched on there is, like, this kid's been a famous name since he was 13, and he's still 22. And sometimes, guys that have been a famous name for almost a decade, like they can get prospect fatigue, right? From like a media perspective. And I think one of the cool things about Blaze is that he's a 22-year-old kid and that's earned his way to AAA. And he's earned his way to AAA by playing both corner infield positions and continuing to get better as a defender when he's been in pro ball. And then obviously his bat has been highly touted since he was in high school. And it's really hard to get to AAA, much less do it when you're 22 years old. And I think some of the things that that he brings to our group is incredible contact skills and ability to put a charge into a baseball. And obviously hitting for power, especially from the right-handed side of the batter's box, is a tough commodity to find. And we're really excited that that he's a part of our organization now. And we're going to task him with playing both sides of third base and first base and continue to develop offensively to see if we can tap into even more of his superpower of hitting the ball really hard and trying to put those balls in productive angles as he gets a little bit older. But a fun, exciting young player that we were really fired up to be able to add to our AAA group.
When Mo spoke the other day, he mentioned that this could take a while. I forget the exact terminology, but they used, but it was connected to the fact that there was a lot of single A players that came on trying to resupplement player development in the farm system and bringing in some young guys. It takes a little bit longer to get things rolling at the big league level. But do you like the idea of being able to get your hands and the organization's hands on players early on in their development?
Sure, I think so, especially if they come from good developmental organizations. And I think a lot of the orgs that we pulled from are just that. I don't know that we walked into that room thinking that we had to target A-ball players or rookie ball players or any one specific level. It was, and Mo touched on this, it's always about just trying to find the best assets that we possibly can and try and find organizations that were in a similar striking point to where we were. And, we happened to get a handful of guys at the high A level that a couple of them made their debut this past week and a handful of the rest of them will this upcoming week. And it really just worked out that way. But I think it is an opportunity for sure when you have a little bit more runway ahead of guys to be able to just put the finishing touches on who they are as a person and who they are as a player to hopefully go up to the big leagues and help us play winning baseball one day. It's not about getting there. It's about playing winning baseball once these guys get there. And it just gives us a little bit more time to invest the right resources to each of their way.
The trade deadline's not the only recent thing that happened that resulted in more players coming in. Obviously the draft just recently.
Sure.
A lot of people are kind of, and I know there's been an assignment or two announced in terms of drafted players coming in. Can you take our listeners through the process of drafting a player, making the decision on if they're just going to stay at the complex, if they're actually going to go to a full season club, if you're going to shut them down for the rest of this year and start next year? I know it's individual for every player, but what is it like as all these decisions are taking place on how you get the career started of recently drafted players?
Yeah, there's a lot of layers to that, and I'll do my best to maybe zoom out to like the 30,000 foot view and then to the individual as well. Is you really, readiness matters a lot. You roll the clock pre-COVID and the draft was in June, a whole month and a half earlier, and a lot of the college players were really just finishing their season, and by the time they walked into the door, they had all played games a week ago, and it was a lot easier to know just how ready are these guys to go out there and compete and do so in a safe and healthy manner. And now we have that added variable of the draft being in July. So I think the first thing that happens is these guys sign, they're all excited, they come out to Jupiter, and that's one of the most fun things working, with our scouting group. It's kind of like that baton pass of sorts, and all the scouts are kind of giving the coaches and the support staff the information on here's who these players are, here's how we've gotten to know them, here's when the last time they played, here's the last time they threw a bullpen, here's the last time they took a live at bat, etc. And then you get the guys on campus and you really try and stress test that with our own eyes. And we do a whole bunch of stuff from a testing parameters side of things, whether it be in the weight room, on the training table, or even out on the field. And then from there, once we have a good baseline for where each player is, just like I talked about earlier, it's the fun part of partnering up with each guy and kind of asking them what they're trying to get out of the remainder of the summer. And then we have our experts in the room that help complete the other side of the puzzle. And here's what we see. Here's what we think a realistic clock is for you to get out and to play and to do that safely. And so really it's the start of that partnership with our players and staff. And, you know, I think some of the fans will see some of those guys hit affiliates here in the next couple of days, which will be really exciting. And then obviously we have some pitchers that were a little bit further away, and it just takes a little bit more time for those guys to be quote ready and ready for the demands of pitching in game for stats that count for the back of their baseball card.
Is it a challenge when you're dealing with college play? Like, not specifically to Liam Doyle, but we'll use him as the example. A guy like him, pitching in the SEC, he gets run hard for a college season, lots of pitches in games. So you want to take advantage of the fact that this is a guy who's kind of stretched out, but you also don't want to put him right back in where all of a sudden he's got too much wear and tear on his arm for a single year. That's kind of a tough thing to handle, right, or deal with?
Yeah, it's you try and strike the Goldilocks zone, for lack of a better analogy, of using all the information I just talked about. And, you know, you could use Liam Doyle as the archetype here of a guy that threw 95 innings in a college season, which is pretty strong workload. And you look at all the other comps of similar college high-profile picks that also were the ace for where they were. And what did they do when they went out with their organization? And how do you kind of use all those previous data points like, you know, Paul Skenes or other names like that to your advantage? And then you got to really use the individualized information for that player. So, we're doing that with Liam. We're doing that with all of our guys. But we're trying to think of what are the demands that we expect him to face as a first-year pro next year? And is there anything we want to layer on top of his body of work already to help put him in an awesome position for 2026 and beyond? And it's not a perfect math formula, that's for sure. It's kind of the art and science and trying to use whatever piece of information we have, but also the experience and intuition of our group.
A couple more questions for Rob Serfolio, who's being incredibly gracious with his time tonight. A lot of people noticed J.J. Weatherholt got a start over at third base. What did you think of in very limited action? How do you think he looked?
Yeah, he looked good over there. You know, it's this has been something we've been talking about for over a month now, and it hit the box score for the first time last night. But you know, this goes all the way back to JJ's last month in Double A, where we really started prioritizing some time during early work and making sure that for any of our players, not just JJ, but we don't know what that first opportunity in a major league lineup is going to be, and so. You know, I just always believe, and I think our group does too, that we owe it to our players to give them multiple avenues to break into a major league lineup, and we never want them to do something in the big leagues for the first time. We can't always eliminate that, but we want to try and do everything we can from a planning perspective so that if that first opportunity is at third base for JJ, then he's really prepared for that because we were intentional with how we waived his playing time and gave him exposure to different positions. So, you know, I think a lot of people deserve credit for that. Our farm director, Larry Day, and our field coordinator, Ryan Barber, have been really putting pen to paper on what's the best way to do this and how do we not have it take away from the other demands that he has on his given day. And we just used the calendar to our advantage, and it was fun to see him actually get some game reps over there. You know, he had some experience doing that going all the way back to his freshman year at West Virginia. So it was fun to see him back over at the hot corner last night. And I think we can expect to see a sprinkle of that continuing moving forward.
Last thing for you, you mentioned earlier that you enjoyed being in the room and watching Mo go through the process of doing phone calls and everything. It's been a unique year for you because you come to the organization knowing that the long-term president of baseball operations is going to be Hein Bloom, but one more year of John Mozeliak, so you'll get the opportunity to work for both. What have you got out of getting to know Mo and working for Mo during this year as he now starts to wind down his tenure?
I think the big thing for me is it's not many people last 18 years or 19 years, however many years it's been for Mo in that number one chair. And that's not by luck. Obviously, this organization has paced the industry in several different areas of acquisition, both on the draft and pro side for a long time. And Mo is a huge part of that. So one, just getting time around how he thinks through the game, how he sees the field. And, you know, I've been incredibly lucky to be able to sit in the same room with him during all of our major league games this year. And just asking him questions about how he thinks about major league moves and developing players and all the nuts and bolts behind the scenes has been pretty awesome. And he's treated me and my family with open arms since the second I got here, which to your point, given all the elements of the transition, certainly not everyone would maybe follow suit in that way. And I think it just speaks to the character and the care factor that he has for this organization that he's obviously brought some incredible results to over the last 20 plus years. So it's been a real treat. And, you know, it's going to be sad that last day I give him a handshake, hopefully a hug at the end of the year.
Rob Serfolio, he is the assistant general manager, player development and performance for the Cardinals. Rob, thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it. And look forward to seeing you at the ballpark here when the team's back in town.
Sounds good, Matt. I'll see you then. Appreciate you having me.
Awesome. Very good. That's Rob Serfolio joining us, and we appreciate him taking some time with us. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I'd be interested. So for folks listening, maybe you want to text into the program. Maybe you want to tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air. For those of you who are watching on the video stream, you just listen to Rob Serfolio talk for the last 15 minutes or so. What jumped out at you? What was the thing that you most took note of in what he had to say? Because he is his own guy. Like, I'm not saying that there's groupthink going on with him and Heim Bloom, but I do know that he was somebody that Heim wanted in this organization. He comes to this organization knowing that his long-term boss is going to be Bloom. So he is somebody who I would say the words coming out of his mouth represent what this organization is going to believe moving forward, if that makes sense. And the thing that I love, and we hit on it early on in the conversation, I love the fact that there is an individual plan for all 200 plus players in the organization. Doesn't matter if you're at the big leagues or at AAA, or if you're playing down in the Dominican League or the Florida Complex League, it doesn't matter that every single player has a plan, and part of that plan is based on the personal relationships that Rob Serfolio and the entire player development staff has with these players. And I just know from if I am sitting there as a player, as a non-prospect playing for Peoria, High A, and all of a sudden I've got this organization that the head of player development wants to get to know me a little bit, and then he's going to give me a plan that includes some of what they learned because of getting to know me. I love that, and I think it's a path that is easier to follow as a player than just some, you know, something that's generated based off, hey, StatCast says that your swing decisions are bad, or you have a bad batting average on pitches that on sliders that are low and away, so work on that. The fact that it is more personalized, I think, is a really, really important part to what the Cardinals are doing from a player development standpoint. We've got more coming up. Stick with us. We're back after the 7 o'clock news for hour number 2 here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Into the 7 o'clock hour we go. When we get done with this hour, we'll jump right into Cardinals baseball. Pregame tonight is going to be at 8:15 and 9:10. First pitch, Cardinals and Dodgers coming your way. Very happy to welcome on a friend. I was saying this earlier, we need to have him on the show more often. We just need to. It's my fault that we don't. You hear him, of course, all over KMOX, sometimes doing pre and post for the Cardinals on the weekends or other times. He's in the mornings for Tom. He's all over the place. And, of course, he is a big part of what's going on over at SIUE. Athletics as well. He's a friend, Joe Pod. Hi, Joe.
Hey, what's happening, man?
Not much. Glad to have you on. Like I said, we need to have you on more often so you and I can just kind of talk through all things Cardinals baseball. So let's just start from 30,000 feet. This is a team that just sold at the deadline, and now the final 2 months of the season, we don't really know what it's going to look like. What are you hoping to see? What are you hoping to learn between now and game number 162 this year?
I think that the biggest thing that I want to see everybody that is being given those opportunities, whether it's Nolan Gorman, whether it's Jordan Walker, whether it's Michael McGreevy or Gordon Graceffo. I want to have some answers, right? And it doesn't necessarily have to be they've become a superstar. Maybe it's that, okay, it's not going to happen in St. Louis. I just want to get some closure, I think, on some of those things. And I think we're starting to, because I think that's what we've been told all year long, is that's what this year is about. And then somewhere along the lines in mid-May, we got, ooh, wait a minute, maybe they're good enough. Maybe they're going to make a run. And so we all got sidetracked for a little bit. And then, of course, kind of got snapped back to reality in July.
It's okay that, like, it was okay to be sidetracked by that, right? As
yes.
long as once
yes.
once it kind of becomes back to what was expected, that everybody reverts back to it, right?
I think so. I think 100%. I think that, what I keep saying, it's like I feel like a broken record on Saturdays and Sundays, is that here's what you want to know, what separates this team from the top of the National League, whether it's Milwaukee or Chicago or the Mets or the top of baseball, is that they can't do it consistently, because what you see is at its best, this team has an offense that can be relentless. They can string hits together and they can beat you up. And they did it on Saturday night after falling behind to the Padres, obviously one of the contenders in the National League, but they don't do it on a regular basis, even to the point of your ace, Sonny Gray, was having a great year, right? But he doesn't do it on a consistent basis. July has been rough. Miles Michaelis had a great May. June was back to reality. That is what I think separates this club from the others.
I don't know where you feel on this, but I think that comes back to talent. Really good players, consistency is part of who they are. It's not just showing it occasionally. And the Cardinals don't have enough really good players. They have a bunch of guys who are nice players who can be part of winning teams, but they can't be the top of your roster.
They can't be. That's exactly right. You can't fill it out with that. You can add to the superstars. You can plug in these guys that are, you know, great role players, or they are, you know, really good players but not superstars. Because you're exactly right. That is what makes the difference. Is that they don't have, you know, there are very few down days, or whether it's hitless streaks or whatever that looks like. Yeah, there's very few at the top echelon of the players.
I was a little bit frustrated because I'm with you. I think that now that they've sold at the deadline and they're 6.5 games out of a playoff spot, the focus needs to be back to what they talked about going into the season with the runway and young players and everything. And then the first thing that happens when Lars Nootbaar gets healthy is Jordan Walker, who's been playing some pretty good baseball here recently and been swinging it all right, he gets taken back out of the lineup. Are you frustrated by that like I am? And does that go back to what we were talking about earlier where, okay, it's okay to kind of pivot when you thought things were going to go well, but then the ability to pivot back when it looks like it's not going to be that?
It absolutely is frustrating, and the reason it is because I don't feel like we don't know what we have. You don't know what you have in Jordan Walker if you don't just let him play, and we've seen it for the last 2 years. As soon as there's any sign of issue, any sign of trouble, he's back down in AAA for a month or 2 months or whatever it is, and I believe, you know, like you said, he's starting to swing the bat really well in July since coming back from the All-Star break. So now you want to know, is this just a hot couple of weeks, or is this something that, you know, he's changed his batting stance a little bit, his approach is different, he's talked about these things, but is that going to mean long-term success, or is it just a, you know, it's worked for a couple of weeks? You can't tell that if you're not giving him that opportunity.
I have to chuckle because neither Walker or Gorman are in the lineup tonight, and one of the beneficiaries is Thomas Ajayi, and that's great. He's a young guy. He needs his playing time, but it's funny to be having this conversation and bring up the Cardinals lineup for the night, and you have neither Walker or Gorman in the lineup, and this was supposed to be the year of finding out about Walker and Gorman, and you finally have a roster situation, namely with Nolan Arenado on the injured list, where you've got more of that opportunity.
Especially with And even before Arenado went on the injured list, he wasn't giving you that much offensively. All we keep hearing is there's got to be another right-hander in the lineup. We've got to be able to switch the dynamic of this lineup. So Jordan Walker is a right-hander in your lineup that potentially has some pop that you want to see, but you've got to let him have that opportunity.
We're talking with Joe Pott. You hear him hosting pre and post on weekends. You hear him all over the place as well here on KMOX. Who's been the guy this year that maybe you've been most pleasantly surprised by?
Walker is one of them, specifically with his defensive play. I had people tell me, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, it'll never happen. This guy will never be a major league outfielder. He's turned himself into a very serviceable major league outfielder. The other one, and again, for defensive reasons, is Alec Burleson, because I think that he has shown that he has the ability to be a serviceable outfielder. We already knew that he had the potential to be a very good offensive player and a legit offensive contributor, and I think that has even come around even more. He's made more progress at the plate. But to add to the fact that now you don't have to worry about, oh, if I can't put him at DH or first base, what am I going to do? He's played both corner outfield spots, and he's played quite well.
Yeah, I love the Burleson story, and the part of it that doesn't even get mentioned there in your answer, which I think adds on to everything that you just said, is his ability to change his approach at the plate with not just swinging at everything. Joe, and I haven't really thought about the defensive side of it as much until just listening to you answer that question. One of the interesting parts of all that is when the season got started, it felt like they were going to do everything in their power to make sure he never played in the outfield. He was a first baseman DH, and you know he and Wilson were basically going to be the same guy, and sometimes one guy would start at first and DH, and sometimes the other. And to the point you make, we knew he had a good throwing arm, but his ability to the routes he takes, he's not a great athlete out there, but he is more than respectable out there in the outfield.
Yeah, and honestly, from everything, just listening to those guys, the Alec Burlesons, the Jordan Walkers, even Victor Scott, they're giving John Jay a ton of credit for the work that he's doing, even with Ivan Herrera getting some starts in left field, and he's talking about taking the reps with John Jay. So perhaps a lot of that credit needs to go to John Jay and the things that he's doing to work with these outfielders.
Real quick, before we get out of here, we don't want to bring you on without mentioning SIUE. And, you know, basketball had such the incredible season last year, getting to the NCAA tournament, and Coach Baroni able to go into the offseason coming off of that. And it feels like he's been out and about a little bit more doing some things. What is life like inside of the athletic department, where really I think the entire athletic department probably continues to have some momentum based off what Ben's basketball did last year?
Well, you're right, and I think that that's really that's been kind of the message, right, is you can't let this opportunity go by when there's this much buzz, when there's this much talk about your program. And like you said, it's not just men's basketball. It trickles down to all of the things that are going on in athletics. So that's really the approach, is let's capitalize on this, and let's do everything we can to keep, like you said, to keep Brian out there, to keep our coaches out there, keep talking about SIUE athletics. In fact, today season tickets opened up for men's and women's basketball. So all of those things, it's really just about capitalizing on that momentum. And I think when we get a little bit into the school year, we're going to see that reflected in the enrollment at SIUE as well.
Yeah, I'm a big believer that athletics is the front door of a university, and that's the way I went to Kansas State, and there was a big connection to overall enrollment and Bill Snyder showing up and turning that football program around. Anybody who doesn't admit that, I think, is woefully incorrect. So this is a
version, right.
Yeah, it's just the way it goes. The other thing that I thought was interesting was, obviously, this is connected to the team playing great basketball down the stretch, but you and the entire athletic staff, and led by your very good athletic director, Andrew Gavin, First Community Arena really became a go-to place to be. That venue became a special venue as the year went along. What has to happen for that to not just be a product of what was happening towards the end of the season, but for it to be a legit, you know, big ticket, people showing up, and SIUE basketball being a really big factor in that community?
Yeah, you know, I think you mentioned it. It was Andrew Gavin that kind of changed the look of First Community Arena, and he added what we call Eddieville on the one side, where we kind of push the bleachers back, and it's a much more social gathering area. We did the same thing with one of the ends. We call it the deck, and it's a corporate sponsored thing. And that's the idea, is that you're coming out to enjoy the people you're with. You know, we've got the food up there, the drink up there, and that's the idea. And I think last year was that perfect storm. People started realizing, hey, this is kind of cool to be up here, to be able to socialize. And then it was like, oh, by the way, there's a really good basketball team right here as well. So we had the perfect storm last year, just kind of everything culminating in that. But it is definitely becoming that people, you know, they talk about, we're going to go to that game on Saturday. We're going to go to that game on Thursday night. So, yeah.
KMOX's own Joe Pott. You'll hear him this weekend. You hear him all the time. Cardinals pre-post, doing morning stuff when Tom is out, wherever else, sometimes hosting this show when I'm out. Joe, always appreciate the time, and I promise you we'll do this more often.
Dude, man, I appreciate you, and happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it.
All right, very good. That is Joe Pott joining us here on the program. We'll take a break. We're still going to, coming up later on, again, we're basically leading you right up until Cardinals baseball tonight. Thought that John Mozeliak had some really interesting things to say to Tom Ackerman yesterday. We're going to replay part of that conversation coming up in just a while. A few other things to get to as well. You're locked into a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Back at it. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Great to have you with us today. We are with you for another 35 minutes or so of this program, and then we'll get to the 8 o'clock news with Maria, and then after that, it'll be Cardinals baseball. Pre-game coverage set to begin at 8:15 tonight. Cardinals and Dodgers opening up a three-game series after the Cardinals just lost 2 of 3 in San Diego against the Padres. I saw, this isn't the point of what I'm about to say, but I was thinking about this. I was doing some self-reflection a moment ago. I always chuckle when people say that I don't bring people on, whether it's on this show or whether it's on the post-game show, people who disagree with me. And I realize, because I'm looking at all the comments that come in on our video stream, and I realize that I am so much more motivated to address the people who say things that I disagree with than, if I address the things that people say that I agree with, it's just kind of an echo chamber. There's no conversation there. So one of our greatest skeptics on the video stream, and you've probably seen his name pop up before if you're watching. For those of you listening, you've probably heard his name. Aaron is not a happy guy when it comes to the state of Cardinals baseball. So he sent in a message during the Rob Serfolio interview and said, okay, so we're going to see Liam Doyle around 2030 because we've been waiting to see Quinn Matthews, Tekoa Roby, Sim Roberta, Cooper Jerby, Max Radjic, and the others. No, I don't think that's right. I think Liam Doyle, barring injury, and one of the guys that you mentioned there in Roby, I think he would have probably gone to the big leagues this year had he not gone injured, if not this year for sure. Next season, I think Liam Doyle is going to be in the big leagues next year at some point. And I think there is a chance, a legitimate chance, that he breaks camp with the team. Now, if there's injuries, there's injuries. And there's not much you can do about that. As far as the other guys, Jerpy's another injury guy, right? But to also be fair when it comes to Jerpy, his progression through the minor league system has not gone the way that you would have wanted it to go even prior to the injury. So when Aaron says Jerpy's name, like that's a half point to Aaron, a half point to me, because the development definitely stalled out, although he was looking pretty good. With all due respect to Sim Roberta, who's been out here like clamoring to see Sim Roberta at the big league level? He's always been somebody who projected out to be just kind of a guy, a replacement level player that is the type of player you need to develop and not the type of player that you need to sign in free agency. So I don't think anybody's clamoring for him. The Quinn Matthews thing is a little bit disappointing this year. I had kind of given up. And I know there's 2 months left in the season. I had kind of given up on the idea of Matthews getting to the big leagues this year, because after that incredible season last year where he was the minor league pitcher of the year for all of the minor leagues, zipping through four separate levels last year, he stalled out a little bit this year. He has not looked overly impressive at AAA. This year, his AAA numbers, he's got a plus four ERA, a 4.09 ERA. Also, what has been alarming is the 49 walks in 59 innings. So that whip is pretty high. Walks plus hits per innings pitched is at just over 1.7. That's a high number. That's a really high number. So I wasn't worried about it because it's his second professional season and he went through four levels last year. So you're allowed to hit AAA where things are going to be a lot tougher and stall out a little bit. But here's where I take a step back and I'm curious about what's going to happen moving forward. His last time out for Memphis was fantastic. On Friday night, Quinn Matthews went 6 2/3 innings, so pitched into the seventh, 2 runs, 5 hits. Here's my favorite numbers: 9 strikeouts, 1 walk. Nine strikeouts, 1 walk. I'm not like captain rush somebody to the big leagues. There's a lot of reasons to let somebody stay in the minor leagues. Right now, the Cardinals have 5 starters. They've got Kyle Leahy around. It feels like if they need to do something there, they can. They've got other guys at AAA who you could add to the 40-man roster, Aaron Wilkerson, a Curtis Taylor. So I'm not sitting here like pitchforks about to march to Busch Stadium. But if Matthews puts together a couple, 2-3 more starts that kind of look like that, is there value in getting him a start or two at the big league level at the end of the season to get his feet wet going into a spring training next year where you would think he would be competing for a job? If he reverts back, if this was just a one-time thing and he kind of reverts back to being the guy he's been most of the year at AAA, I'm stepping back away from that, and it's fine. I'm not worried about it. But I do think Matthews, if he pitches at a pretty high level for the next 3 weeks, a month, you know, next 3-4 starts, you start to maybe consider in September, do you find a spot for him on the roster and get him a spot or two just for him to kind of figure it out. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, I want to replay for you a conversation that Tom Ackerman had with John Mozeliak. Thought it was interesting. There was one particular point about where he talked about how the how Heim Bloom, much of the responsibility has already gone to Heim Bloom now that they are post trading deadline, because so much of what's going on now looks to 2026 and beyond. We'll hear from Mo coming up in just a moment here on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Have about 25 minutes left in the program. Then we'll get to the 8 o'clock news and then Cardinals baseball after that. They are in Los Angeles tonight to open up a series against the Dodgers. John Mozeliak makes a weekly visit to Sports on a Sunday Morning with Tom Ackerman. They always get into a lot of things. This was the first conversation since the trade deadline. And they get into a little bit kind of the transition here moving forward. And I won't give too much away because I wanted to replay the conversation. But Mo definitely makes it clear that the Heim Bloom era of Cardinals baseball, if it's not underway, it is getting underway, as a lot of the stuff that would normally be done this time of year is focused on the next year, and that is all stuff that Heim Bloom would be doing as the president of baseball operations. So I wanted to play back this interview in case you missed it from yesterday. John Mozeliak visiting with Tom Ackerman and opening up the conversation. One of the things that Mo talked about was looking at this year's team, how pleased they have been with what they've gotten out of their bullpen.
The one thing that we felt all along this year was that we really did have some good arms in that bullpen, meaning quality pitchers that can make pitches. Yes, some of them are young. Yes, some of them don't have experience. But, you know, the next couple months, they're going to get opportunities that they obviously weren't getting exposed to in the first 4 months of the season. And so it's going to be fun to watch. But, you know, I'm certainly excited about where we are. Obviously, I you know, don't like having to do what we did at the trading deadline, but We really couldn't go the last 2 months with expiring contracts. It just didn't make any sense. And hopefully we added some depth to our minor leagues and some quality young prospects. As you know, you never know what you're really going to get until you see them. But certainly going to give these young guys an opportunity and see what we have.
Yeah, if you would break down the Helsley deal, those are 3 single-A players. You just mentioned we're not going to know what they look like until we see them for a little longer. But one of them that jumps out, Jesus Baez, projects perhaps as a third baseman, has some pop and some speed, Mo.
Yeah, I think like the one thing, given his age, given where he's playing right now, he's going to stay on the dirt. Certainly get a lot of looks at short. Obviously, we don't have a massive need for a shortstop at the big league level, but you know, just keep him developing. I think the exciting part of him is really just the offensive profile. He's not a big swing and miss guy. He's someone that puts the ball in play. He hits the ball hard. And, you know, candidly, when you're looking at how the game is evolving, especially after you watch the Padres, seeing someone like Arise who, you know, always puts the ball in play, you know, I kind of miss watching those kind of games. So having someone that might have that type of profile, not saying he's going to be him, but just someone that makes high contact rate and hits it hard, I think that's a good skill.
Intriguing player you received for Mats, Blaze Jordan, big-time pop when he was a kid and through high school, and then the Red Sox grabbed him, and it was Heim Bloom, part of that draft process. Blaze Jordan for Mats, Mo.
Yeah, obviously I think the power has not grown as it was so prolific at a young age of 13, but his offensive profile is, again, a guy that's a high contact rate, low strikeout rate, good walk rate. His approach is just like a pure hitter. And from that standpoint, that's what we liked about him. Obviously, we're going to see what he looks like defensively, how he fits in. But, you know, ultimately, the bat profile is what we were excited about.
The Maton deal seemed like it came down to the wire, did it? Was that down to the last few minutes, or did you have something in place?
No, it was. So Maton obviously was a guy that a lot of teams had interest in, and we just weren't lining up on the players we liked versus what they were willing to trade. So there was some frustration going on as we approached the deadline. And then with Texas, I think we completed that deal as far as like physicals and all that with maybe 1 minute and 8 seconds to spare. It was like, it was not a lot of room. But you know, again, if we hadn't been able to do it, I think we would have been disappointed on holding him on. You know, Phil was great for us. He was, I think he really helped some of our young pitchers along the way as well. So hopefully we'll see if these young guys can, you know, take what they learned from somebody like a Phil Maton and grow. And I think that's the fun part of it. But, you know, a lot of other things were going on at the trading deadline, but it just wasn't to the point where myself and really even somebody like a Heim, who's starting to think a lot more in the future than I really need to focus on, we just weren't getting the types of offers or felt like we were getting what we needed in return to make those kind of deals. And, you know, ultimately, I think we positioned ourselves well. Still, there's lots of work to always be done. And, you know, I think these guys are, you know, now you flip the script to the offseason and start thinking more about that, and that's where their headspace will be.
The deadline got a little crazy. I mean, I think the Twins fire sale really lit the fire, if you will, for that deadline. I felt like that was real. And obviously the Padres got very active, but it got fast paced there quickly, didn't it, Mo?
Yeah, I think you could say Seattle was active. You could say San Diego was active. You can say Yankees were active. You know, the buyer's market was there. But, you know, there were also other teams trying to improve too, Boston, Toronto, Detroit. But it just wasn't necessarily always aligning. And the Minnesota situation, I don't think a lot of people saw coming, especially how aggressive they were on trading off. Baltimore was aggressive trading off. So, you know, the sellers became a little bit more prominent than maybe people first thought.
It pretty much went as you told us last week that, you know, they're, without naming them, we knew who the players were who had expiring contracts, and you told us position players don't have them. Romero doesn't either. So I would imagine you got calls on a lot of people, including all those lefty bats and a lefty arm, but just ultimately could not find the right players that you wanted. And take us into the room on that. So you have a whole list of people that you want, and it's just not coming through?
So obviously, every deal is sort of independent, but what you're trying to do is, as teams line up to talk, for example, on Helsley, you're trying to determine, like, okay, what's the best possible deal we can get for Hels, or the best deal or the deal we most value? And so I felt like once we cleared Helsley, then we could then focus on multiple things. But Helsley was drawing a lot of attention, and obviously the return was going to be more significant. So a lot of energy went on that. I was extremely grateful we were able to accomplish that the day before the deadline. So then it allowed us to have a lot more bandwidth to really entertain a lot of other things. But clearly we wanted to make sure the expiring contracts were moved. And we were able to do that. And then a lot of the other things that we teased or talked about just never got to the point where we had the confidence to really act on them.
And moving forward, I know you're not, I've never found you to be an emotional person necessarily, very businesslike, but I'm sure that was, that hit you, that was the last one for you, the last trade deadline.
You know, you never say never, right? It was, yeah, it was a bit surreal in terms of like walking out of there, in terms of like, when you think about my career with the Cardinals, I mean, I don't envision myself having to make any real major decisions now between now and the time I step away. So, you know, that was a lot going on that week. And then to walk out of that room, thinking back that those are the kind of things that you miss because they're exciting. It's a lot going on. But there's also the part that, you know, you're not going to miss, where people say you didn't do enough, you're boring, you know, you're just a vanilla. And it's like, that's the side of the game where getting away from it is going to be kind of fun, where I just, you know, don't have to hear that much anymore. And, you know, I'm going to miss a lot about the game of baseball, but some of those things I'm not at all.
Well, you were certainly on one of the biggest stages in sports, president of baseball operations of the St. Louis Cardinals. You still are. There will be a transition. There has been a transition of power to Chaim Bloom. How does that work now moving forward here? It's not obviously an overnight handoff. This has been going on for a while.
Yeah, I mean, obviously in my role, I've been still in my role. I think when you think about like the word transition now, as the organization starts to focus on 2026, clearly employee contracts, employee hiring, if there's going to be any employees that aren't going to be a part of the organization, like that's really going to have to fall under Chaim and then the director level staffing. If they want my opinion, I absolutely will give it to them, but I can't be the one running those meetings anymore because obviously that's their team moving forward. And so, you know, as we look at August, September, October, when I was, you know, in charge and not going anywhere, I would always use the month of August for strategic planning and getting organized. And then all those action plans would then go into motion in September. And then usually we'd use October to fill in any gaps we have. But then as we start to get into October, transition into how we want to think about roster building and player acquisition. So all of that, I imagine they're going to follow a very similar path because it's just kind of what you do in this game. But that's really for them to take the lead on and not necessarily for me to be involved in anymore.
I've had a lot of questions about the complex in Jupiter, and I haven't asked you about that. How is that moving along?
It's going. There's a lot going on. I'm hoping to pop down at some point to really give you a better update. But the pictures I receive, it's a huge project. I mean, as you can imagine, both sides are getting worked on, meaning the Cardinals, Marlins, and we're not only are we renovating the actual building that you're used to seeing, but there's also going to be three new structures that are being put up: a batting cage, a performance center, and then a commissary/conference center. So a lot's going on. You know, we're excited about what it's going to look like. That might be one of the things I'm going to miss most, is not actually being a part of like the ribbon cutting, if you will. But maybe I'll pop back down for that, because it's been a labor of love for almost like 10 years. We've been working on this, and just between the trying to get some help on the public financing, trying to get designs, and it's just been a lot, as you know. In the end, I think it's going to be really cool what they ended up doing. And I think from a player standpoint, they're going to enjoy what they see, because the actual footprint's not going to change that much in terms of like the intimacy of that ballpark. And then I think some of the ballpark amenities for our fans will be much improved as well. So a lot of positives, and hopefully, you know, come mid-February next year, it's ready to go.
Mo, finally, you've been at the very top. I mean, you've won world championships. You've seen this machine moving at its best. You've seen the fans be turned away. It couldn't get into the ballpark. You and ownership both. Just looking at the future here, how do you get back to that? And did you hear them? Did you feel that with the empty seats? And did that send a ripple through the organization? How do you get back to that feeling again?
Well, I certainly hope we're hearing it. You know, I'm there every day. I definitely know that it's not what it once was. I do feel like ever since we came back from the pandemic, it hasn't been necessarily the same. But, you know, you're seeing other places draw. And I think it's more than just necessarily like talking about winning baseball. You know, there's other things that are around the ballpark that we have to just make sure that we can address, from things like safety, parking, accessibility. All of those things need to go into how we approach getting back to where we were for so long. And it's not a light switch. It's not one simple answer. But, you know, I think a thoughtful and strategic way to do it, I think eventually the fans will come back. But you got to always remind yourself there are some ebb and flows and cycles of these things. And, you know, every team has experienced a lull over the last 30 years. No one is consistently drawn, with the exception of maybe the Cardinals for that period of time. But now we are starting to see a dip. There's no doubt about it. And we can't take our customers or our fans for granted. And we have to make sure that we hear what they want and address that.
That was John Mozeliak, Cardinals President of Baseball Operations, speaking with Tom Ackerman yesterday morning during Sports on a Sunday morning. We got a comment, and it's from somebody who comments a lot, and I really appreciate him, but said that Mozeliak blaming the problem since 2023 on the pandemic. He mentioned it, like, I'm not trying to run away from that, but he followed that up with, but look, other teams across the league are drawing. So that was his... I don't think it was blame. I think he mentioned that as maybe being a contributing factor, but very quickly said, look at the rest of the league. Look at other teams. They're having no problem drawing. So we got to figure out what we got to do. And obviously it's performance on the field, but he mentioned some other things, which I think are legit concerns. There are people out there that are uncomfortable with coming downtown, no matter how overstated or understated the idea of security in downtown is. There's work to be done in downtown St. Louis. There's things that need to happen. So it's all, if the Cardinals were winning a bunch of games and World Series contenders, I have no doubt they'd be drawing a bunch of people. They're not. How do you still draw people when you're not? That's when all those other factors start to play in for sure.